I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Speaking off the cuff or extemporaneously is seen as a marvelous talent to have, especially since for a lot of people, public speaking ranks up there with the more egregious fears that we have. A new book provides insight on how to do it better. Impromptu, leading in the moment, provides such useful knowledge about how readers can think on their feet and speak more eloquently in every situation. Whether it's at elevator pitch or a last-minute introduction to a luncheon crowd, to a well-timed tweet or bon mots at a dinner party, there's a lot in this book to learn from. Judith Humphrey is its author, and I'll ask her about the many examples of riveting and clever speakers and what they might have had in terms of knowledge, reading habits, and experience that might be good tips to have. Judith Humphrey is the founder of the Humphrey Group. Launched in 1988, it was the first Canadian firm to focus on teaching top executives to be effective speakers. She's since retired, but she continues to speak about the important connection between leadership and communication. JudithHumphrey.com is the website, and the Twitter handle is @Judith_Humphrey. This new book is published by Wiley. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Toronto earlier this week, Judith Humphrey. Ms. Humphrey, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here.
You know, speaking in public scares a lot of people, and I'm sure you've heard that statistic over the years that people would rather die than say have to speak in public. Over the years, with your work with Humphrey Group and the consulting that you've done, I'm sure many an executive has come to you looking for help. What I find interesting in your book is you talk about the difference in what people want today as opposed to, say, 30 years ago. I mean, that's changed, hasn't it?
It has changed. Actually, I began my corporate life as a speechwriter and working with executives on formal speaking. And the speech, the written-out speech, was the mode at the time.
Yeah.
But it has changed. I mean, time and space have changed. People have less time to write speeches and learn them and deliver them from the podium. And audiences want more transparency. They want more honesty, and they want more authenticity. And so that brings us to impromptu speaking.
Yeah, and I guess that's where the culture is, isn't it? That we don't want any longer the sort of old-fashioned speeches that we're used to from, say, politicians or business leaders.
That's right, because we don't always trust what they're saying to be their own words or their own ideas. And so we really want people to be open, forthcoming, clear in their thinking, and especially in the corporate world when it comes to leadership. People will not follow a leader that they don't believe in.
Mm. Yeah, that's the other thing when I'm reading impromptu that I understand a lot more since I finished the book, is that this connection between leadership and communication, I mean, that's vital, isn't it? And we tend to overlook how important that is.
It is vital because, you know, you can be a strong speaker, but if you're not a strong leader, then your words will fall on deaf ears. The connection between leadership and communications, which we built in the Humphrey Group, I mean, that was the essence of what I created in creating the company and what the others in the Humphrey Group have built, is this idea that you want to be thinking of leading in every one of your communications. Every communication can be an act of leadership if we think of it that way. It could be an inspirational moment in the hall, in an elevator, in answering a question, in a meeting. But you have to be thinking along those lines to make it happen.
Now, Judith, are good extemporaneous speakers, impromptu speakers, are they born that way?
No, some people have a natural pleasure in the extemporaneous. But someone like Martin Luther King, let's mention him because today is Martin Luther King Day in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a fantastic extemporaneous speaker, but he actually prepared his thinking, and he had those messages in his mind. And in fact, the I Have a Dream speech was largely extemporaneous. The I Have a Dream refrain was not actually part of the speech he wrote the night before. But when someone from the audience said, "Tell us about the dream," he came out with that almost a riff, a wonderful extemporaneous set of lines around the idea of the dream, I Have a Dream, and what that meant to him, what that would mean to the U.S. So that was all off the cuff.
Yeah. The other thing that you mentioned in the book is Robert Kennedy's speech, very impromptu remarks the night that King died.
Oh, yes.
And he had to announce to this audience that King had died.
And he did it.
Yeah.
He did it right off the top. You know, he immediately said, I have some bad news.
Yeah.
And the speech was so eloquent. The interesting thing about that is that, I mean, Bobby Kennedy was a great orator, a great speaker.
Right.
And that was one of the most eloquent tributes in U.S. history. And somebody gave him a speech. Somebody had written a speech for him to deliver. But he actually spoke off the cuff.
Right.
He put that speech in his pocket and just spoke from the heart. And that's one of the reasons it's so brilliant.
Yeah, he deploys Aeschylus, and that speaks to how well read he is.
Yes. I mean, how many people could quote Aeschylus off the cuff, or any poet?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I mention in the book and really emphasize, that you have to have a prepared mind to be a good extemporaneous speaker. You have to know your messages, have a keen sense of your own leadership, have some poetry in your mind. That is, you have to be well-read. You have to know your subject. And so if you are learned in that way or prepared in that way, then you will be a good speaker extemporaneously.
Yeah, you need to have those things in your head, and I guess that's the lesson there in terms of being well-read. And widely read, I should say, that you can deploy all these quotes or remarks and such, you know, at a moment's notice.
Yeah. So, for those listening, I think it's important to think about who are your favorite authors, who are your favorite poets. Learn some lines, because there will be moments when you can use them. It's always nice to start a tribute with a quote.
Yeah.
Or referenced something historical. His Aeschylus quote was in the middle of the speech.
Yeah.
But, you know, the things he said extemporaneously are still true today. He said, what we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred.
Yeah.
What we need in the United States is not violence or lawlessness, but love and wisdom. I mean, isn't that amazing that
right.
he came up with that off the cuff?
Yeah. And then he used this speaks to how memorable the speech is. He mentions his own experience with violence, his own brother being assassinated some years before, and talks about vengeance and how one should deal with anger. And I think that really, he read the crowd very well. And I think that's something that you talk about in the book, is you have to know your audience. Because, I mean, at that moment where he's telling them that King has died, and this is 1968, let's not forget how tumultuous that year was, the audience could have gone south on him, and it could have gone unruly. But the fact that he was able to say that, hey, you know, I had this happen in my family as well, someone shot, and yet I didn't turn to vengeance, you know, it was, and you talk about this in the book, just how important it is to read the crowd and I think that's why prepared remarks often fall on deaf ears, is because they're not, when you're writing your speech alone in your office, it's a different atmosphere than when the actual crowd that you're in front of, right?
Absolutely. You always have to read your audience, and if you have, let's say, an event you're going to, you know who's going to be there. You want to think about what you want to say to them, what kind of idea you can close on. If you don't know the guest list, then you start sizing them up when you arrive.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always an opportunity in any situation to move someone, to motivate someone, to lead. And that's why you want to read the audience, because, as you say, Bobby Kennedy could have really encountered an angry crowd, but because his message was so sensitive to the way they felt, they responded very positively.
Now, these great speakers like Churchill and Lincoln, they obviously have a gift, and you write in the book that for Lincoln especially, I mean, it was hard for him to speak extemporaneously, speak impromptu, and yet it's something that you have to work at, right?
Yeah, he actually was a lawyer, and he told his fellow lawyers that they should work hard at extemporaneous speaking. He said it would do you well in your careers to be good extemporaneous speakers, and it certainly served him well.
Yeah, and that's the same with Churchill. Even the pauses were something that he had to, say, work on or rehearse even, or even place in the text itself, right?
Oh, yes, and that's important. I mean, the voice, the pauses, in extemporaneous speaking, we want to have just as much presence as we do when we, even more presence actually than yeah. we read prepared speeches, and pausing is very important.
And you talk in the book, there's a section in the book where you talk about breathing and just how important that is. I mean, it helps, one, in calming the nerves, but the right pause or the right, you know, you can really get your point to, you know.
Well, because people can be very nervous when they speak extemporaneously, especially if it's a high-stakes situation. Many of them are, you know, if you're offering a tribute to someone or going away, set of remarks, retirement remarks to your colleagues, or if you're speaking up at a meeting to make a point, nerves can really take over, and so that pause and breathing calms you down and will make you sound more leader-like,
more
in control, more confident.
Yeah, I've got a problem with ums and ahs, but I've found over the years that if you use them effectively, they should be all eliminated from speech, but if you use them effectively, they can be useful, especially if you're answering a question or something. You sound like you're actually thinking, right?
Mm-hmm. You don't want too many. You don't want to have a lot of empty expressions. Pauses are very good not only for you when you're speaking, but they're good for the audience, because when you think about it, the audience processes what you're saying after you've said it. So let's say you're delivering a sentence or a full thought.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be able to think about that until you've completed it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not thinking about it while you're delivering it. They're listening with their ears while you're delivering it, but they listen with their mind when you've finished delivering it. So if you rush on to the next idea without pausing, then they won't have a chance to grasp what you just said. Whereas if you pause after each idea, the audience uses that time to think about what you just said and therefore to embrace your thinking more successfully. So those pauses really work for the audience.
Now, I know you've been retired with the Humphrey Group for about a year now, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you would get clients coming in asking for help or assistance, did you find that they're doing, because this annoys me a lot when I hear people, you know, especially in business when they're giving remarks or speaking to the press, that they use a lot of jargon? Did you see a lot of that?
It depends on the individual and their role. Some people are more focused on jargon than others. We, of course, dissuade our clients in the Humphrey Group from using jargon. And, of course, Bart Egnall's book is about the language of leadership and getting rid of jargon.
Right.
I think it's just endemic to business that people start using jargon and they start treating it as though it means something. And very often, it's just a catch-all for something that can't be explained, that hasn't been thought through clearly. So we say use simple language. I mean, Churchill talks about using simple, short words. So never say however if you can say but.
Mm.
Never say in order to if you can say to. start sentences with ands and buts. You don't have to have long, complicated sentences. The simpler the better, because, you know, the audiences process short sentences and short words much better than long sentences and long words. And that's one of the great things about impromptu speaking, that we tend to use shorter expressions and shorter, more conversational ways of speaking than people do when they're reading speeches or delivering PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah. It also, I mean, I find that when I listen to certain interviews on television and the sort, people that engage in the use of jargon want to sound smarter than they actually are.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Everybody sees through that.
Yeah. You talk about that in the book, authenticity, because we're looking for that a lot, not only in our leaders, but in the products that we buy. I guess authenticity can't be faked, can it?
No. I guess by definition,
yeah, it
is openness, transparency, coming clean with your thinking. And actually, the book talks about a number of ways you can be authentic. You know, sharing your ideas. Mm. I mean, really, truly telling the room what you believe. Sharing your values, talking about your values, what matters to you, what matters most. Talking about your vulnerabilities.
Mm.
And that's one that people have traditionally have had a hard time doing, but leaders, like everybody else, have their vulnerabilities, and people want to hear that.
Yeah, and it's they want something to connect to, and I think that's something that says something about our culture, that we want our leaders, business or political, we want to relate to them.
Yeah.
And that personal experience, I mean, that's key to winning the audience over, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the audience wants to know that there's a connection between the leader speaking and the audience. And vulnerabilities can be shared and bringing the audience closer to their leaders. I think, though, that it's important to say that leadership and speaking as a leader also involves high-level thinking. So it's not just sharing your flaws or your vulnerabilities, but it's raising the perspective of the audience, having them believe something they didn't believe when they walked in the room or when they heard you speak. You know, if you're walking down the hall, let's say you're a leader, you're a manager or a vice president, walking down the hall, if you say to one of your staff members who's walking past you, "How's it going?" And you don't stay around to listen to what they say, then you're not really leading. You may be authentic, but you're distracted and you're not doing anything that's going to be inspiring. What you really want to do is stop, say, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you. I love the comment you made in the meeting. And let's talk about it. I think it has some potential." That's an inspiring moment, and that's the kind of leadership exchange that we talk about and that I talk about in the book.
Yeah, because employees do want to feel connected to the company, and I think that's a marvelous way for a leader in a company, this one-on-one in the hall, in the elevator, bumping into them somewhere. Mm-hmm. That really wins them over, isn't it? I mean, when you
exactly.
talk...
Exactly, and that's really the new speech.
Yeah.
I mean, as you said earlier, everything has been transformed, and this is the new way of communicating your leadership. In the elevator, a comment in the hall, a passing reference in a meeting, a huddle. You know, these are wonderful opportunities that come upon leaders 20 times, 30 times a day. You know, it's not just one speech annually, but it's these wonderful leadership moments that all business people, and in fact, people outside the business world have.
Yeah.
Moments to inspire, influence, and persuade, and this is what the book is all about.
The other thing that I've done interviews with authors and such for I guess this is the 15th year now. So I've talked to a lot of people over the years, and so I get people asking me from time to time, "What's the secret to a good conversation?" And you know, what sort of questions should I ask? And I always tell people that the first skill is listening. because you have to listen to the guest, otherwise you're not going to have a good conversation. I mean, I could have, you know, 3 or 4 pages of questions, but if I'm not listening to the guest, what difference does it make, right?
Right.
And you write in the book something that I found rather interesting, is that not only is listening important, but it's something that one does with their ears, but it's something that they do physically as well. And if you're not listening properly, the audience gets that, especially, you know, and not only when I refer to the audience, I'm not referring to like a crowd, but these personal interactions, these one-on-one things too, that mm-hmm. if the person isn't listening well enough, the other person gets that and gets turned off by that too, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Actually, there are 3 kinds of listening that I talk about in Impromptu. Physical listening, as you mentioned, mental listening, mm-hmm. and emotional listening. And we should be good at all those, wherever we are. As you say, whether we're talking to a crowd or whether talking to one person. You know, physical listening means you actually use your body to listen, so you actually focus your eyes on the other person who's talking.
Uh-huh.
You use positive body language, all those things. You know, mental listening involves actually listening to the ideas, what it is that the other person is saying.
Right.
And in some cases, helping them expand upon what they're saying.
Mm.
And emotional listening, which is what we call emotional intelligence, just connecting emotionally with the other person or with the room, as Robert Kennedy did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like reading between the lines. It's listening between, the pauses and the sort, isn't it? I mean, that's very important, too. I mean, a lot of these conversations that I have with people, like the one I'm having with you right now, is over the phone. And so, you know, I can't see physically, you know, what mm-hmm. condition the guest might be in. But, I mean, if you listen carefully, you can sort of get, you know, how they're feeling almost, right?
Yeah, you can, because you hear it in their tone, right?
Yeah.
Tone, their energy level, and you have to read all those things, absolutely.
Yeah. And distractions are probably something that are physical distractions. That's something that's a lot more acute now, especially when we have our phones or devices all around us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're finding that in public. A lot of people aren't listening as well as they should because they're staring at their phone.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I mentioned in the book, that there are a lot of physical distractions. People walking by the door, you know, you can see in a room that some people look at the person walking into the room or walking past the room. And you don't want to do that. You want to have one-on-one eye contact. Whoever's talking, you want your eyes to be glued to them and focused entirely on what they're saying. And that's great listening.
Yeah. And one of the keys in your book, Impromptu, that I got after finishing it, is that if you manage to do better in a lot of these things that we've just talked about, this will lead to faster, better decision-making. I mean, that's been your experience with all these people that you've talked to over the years, that's what they've come away with, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, because decisions today are made at all levels of a corporation, of an organization. Decisions aren't made anymore just at the top. So everybody is part of the decision-making process. And as such, everybody needs to listen to everybody else. Everybody has a voice, but everybody has to also incorporate the voice of others at all levels. And so you can't really just listen to the senior executives. You have to listen to your team. You have to listen to people across the organization. You have to listen to people lower than you on the totem pole.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has some intelligence, and this is in part because everybody has access to technology. They have access to information, and so they have ideas about how things should happen. And so the listening process, if it's done well, leads to much better and faster decisions than in the old school approach.
Yeah, Judith, this is, I could talk to you all day about this book. It's a fascinating book, and it's a useful one. Congratulations on it. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you. It's been great to talk about Impromptu. And the book is available on Amazon. And so I hope your listeners have enjoyed the discussion. I'd love the Impromptu with you.
The book is called Impromptu, Leading in the Moment. It's published by Wiley. Its author, Judith Humphrey, joined me on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.